The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
This has been an absolutely long time coming. And I mean, we're talking about like, maybe a month and a half of real conversation. But really, I think that the idea was thrown around for a while. This is the official first episode of The Solar Panel, a Suns podcast, part of the almighty Baller Network. My name is Tim Tompkins. Joining us, as always, Mr. Greg Esposito, Suns columnist for AZ Sports 360's Purple Rain, as well as Dave King at Dave King NBA on Twitter, managing editor of Bright Side of the Sun. Hello, good afternoon, and good day to you both.
Hey, what's up? Now, I'm a little jealous because Dave's title sounds so great, and mine sounds like some schmuck that just writes on the internet. I'm jealous of Dave's title.
Yeah, we're both just some schmucks who write on the internet, though. I just got to make mine up.
That's true.
Well, I mean, Greg, because this is, you know, the first episode of the Sun Solar Panel, and can you kind of go into what your role was with the Suns? Because you, by all means, are definitely not just somebody that writes on the internet.
Well, I always was somebody that wrote on the internet, but for the 5 years previous to this, the five seasons previous to this, I was the head of Sun social media and also the senior digital manager for the Phoenix Suns. So, and post game radio host for two of those seasons. So heavily involved with the Phoenix Suns, been a lifelong fan and really excited to be along with you guys. Well, I'm excited to be here with you, Tim. I'm lukewarm on being here with us Dave, but I'm sure we'll get into why at some point, our budding rivalry between the two of us.
All right. Well,
hey, Dave. Greg. So wait, Greg, I got a question for you. So you were giving me a little bit of a hard time for my self-proclaimed title. What does senior digital manager mean with the Suns? Describe your job.
Well, it was, we're not ready to make you a director, so we're going to put senior in front of manager is what that part was. But no, I was in charge of all the content. I managed five people on our team, including videographers and writers, and kind of oversaw the content on digital as well as created some of that content as well for Suns.com, the Suns app, and all the Suns social channels.
So I bet that you have a really good perspective on this then. So the NBA recently sent out a memo basically saying that teams and players need to knock it off, giving each other a hard time. And I always kind of thought that that wasn't one of the best things about NBA Twitter, was when you saw the teams kind of going at it. And I remember, I think it was the 76ers, or it was the Hawks giving the 76ers a hard time about their floor and that kind of thing. Coming from your end of it, Greg, what did you make of that memo that was sent out to the NBA?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. It was basically the Wild West for years. They let us do whatever. They're like, yeah, it's this Twitter and Facebook thing, and it really means nothing. And yeah, let these people play around on there. And so we got a lot of leeway. We did a lot of fun things, hashtag battles. We went back and forth between teams. My favorite was in Summer League, myself and Max Rapoport, who was running the Sixers handle at the time, went back and forth joking about why Will Smith from The Fresh Prince wasn't on their Summer League roster, and it wound up on SportsCenter and all this stuff. Like, it's just, it was a fun way to interact between teams that really didn't involve the players. But you knew it was only a matter of time until somebody stepped over the line, a player got upset, they got into it with a team account, and then you knew the hammer was going to be dropped. And that was kind of what happened this year. So it doesn't surprise me. It's unfortunate, but there's a lot of creative people still in NBA Twitter that I think are going to find ways around this rule that'll still be quite entertaining. And even with this rule, it's still the best Twitter group in all of professional sports.
Hey, Greg, did this kind of start a couple of years ago when, was it the Rockets social media guy? The Rockets went up 3-1, and I think it was was it the Rockets up 3-1 in the playoffs?
Over the Mavericks,
yeah,
right?
Against the Mavs.
Yeah.
Over the Mavericks, and they had the gun and the horse head or something like that emojis right?
Yeah, it was a gun, a horse head emoji, and it said, "Shh, be quiet. This will be over soon enough." And that was really when somebody finally stepped over the line a little too far, and the gentleman that ran that account got some pub and play for about a week, and then kind of disappeared after that. He was fired right away by the team, and that was kind of the beginning of the end of how much fun we could have on social media.
Well, Dave, I want to bring this over to you. So anybody listening right now for the first episode of the Sun Solar Panel, you're the managing editor of Bright Side of the Sun. Can you kind of speak a little bit about what your role is with Bright Side of the Sun? What exactly is it, and how you got acquainted with the Phoenix Suns in the first place?
All right, sure. Yeah, this is not nearly as exciting as Greg's story, so I'm glad I came second. I got to follow that up. Bright Side of the Sun's been around since 06, and it was originally run by a guy named, I believe his name is Dan Hinton. I always try to say Hilton, but I think it is Hilton, who then moved into the Suns arena, working for them, I think, in the analytics area. And Seth Pollock took over, who then moved into a more national role on blogging. And then so I took over the site. And the only reason I'm in charge is because I'm consistent and reliable, I think. I don't think I have any special powers or talents or anything, but I'm consistent and reliable. And so I'm always available to make sure the site is up and running. I'm always thinking about Suns content. I love writing. I love writing more than anything else. And because I'm reliable and I don't look like a freak, I think I'm at a lot of access to Suns games.
Dave.
Yeah,
that's
well,
debatable.
We're not showing video to everybody else, so they can believe I don't look like a freak. And for that reason, I think I'm able to get access to Suns games as well because I don't scare anybody. So, you know, between those three things, I think I've got a real future in this business.
What's been the most rewarding part of it for you?
Actually having access to the games. I've been a fan since Kyle Macy in the 80s. I've always followed the Suns. And just being able to be around the team, interview the players, see how the players react after a tough loss or a big win. There's been way too few big wins. But, man, that 2013-14 season was fun. And it's just the most rewarding thing is being around and part of the game. I just think that's just great.
So what we're doing right here is, as far as naming the episodes, and we kind of flubbed because we have put up two teaser episodes of this. So what we're going to do is the third episode is going to be named after a player with the number 3 that had the fourth episode is going to be named after a player that had the number 4. And so, Greg, can you kind of go into how we're going to go about figuring out which player is going to get the designated name of the episode?
Yeah, so what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to follow us at Suns Solar Panel on Twitter. We're going to put out a poll early in the week with the 4 options of guys that wore the number of the episode that's about to come up. You vote on it, and we will name the episode after that player. Now, I didn't realize we were counting the first two teaser episodes in the episode count, so I had put up a poll about what episode number 1 should have been named. And Amari Stoudemire, if we were doing this in that order of 1, we're just going to choose a guy for number 3. So I'm going to let Tim do the honors of letting you know who episode number 3 is after, and then episode number 4, you, the fans, are going to be able to vote on it.
So we're going to go with this one. We're going to go with Ish Smith. It was kind of a debate in my mind, the Jared Dudley versus the Ish Smith. I think everybody collectively really appreciates Jared Dudley. But talking about Ish Smith and the need for a backup point guard on a really good contract, that the Suns, in my opinion, have just found a way to always relinquish these quality role players and these quality guards. And I think a shout out to them and what they've done for the team. And to that extent, and this was something that I just found out the other night, was the Suns signed Ronnie Price for the rest of the season. He didn't play against the Bulls. What do you guys think Ronnie Price's role, just to kind of speak on that, will be? Is it more of a practice role, or are we going to see him on the court?
Yeah, I think he's going to be more of a practice guy and eventually a coach. I wouldn't be surprised if this summer, if he decides that it's okay not to try to play for another NBA team like he did this past summer. Coach Watson said he'd always have a spot on his coaching staff for Ronnie Price. And so when Ronnie's ready to coach, he's got a job here with the Suns. He probably has jobs waiting for him around the league as well, but definitely with the Suns, and since he came back, and the Suns are giving him playing contracts for the rest of the year without expecting him to actually take the court during a game unless there's major injuries. I think they're just laying the groundwork for him to join as a player development coach or something like that this summer.
Yeah, he's basically that player development coach right now. So,
The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
Trade deadline came and went. Suns traded PJ Tucker, which I got to say, it was really inspiring going onto Suns Reddit and seeing the outpour of affection for PJ Tucker. They ended up trading PJ Tucker to the Toronto Raptors for 2017 and 28 second rounders, as well as Jared Solinger. What was your guys' initial thoughts on the return on the trade?
I think it's about what you could expect for a contract that was basically an expiring contract. The Toronto Raptors are renting PJ Tucker for hopefully a playoff run where he can help them defend a guy like a LeBron James. And I think you got the return that you really could expect. A couple second rounders is great. Jared Solinger was just salary filler. They let him go. But you get some assets in return, and you give PJ Tucker the opportunity to compete in the playoffs, which a guy like him, he really deserves that. And he hasn't had an opportunity here in Phoenix to do that. I'm excited to see what he's able to give the Toronto Raptors here coming up in April and May.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I talked to Alvin Gentry earlier. I guess it was about 2 weeks ago when the Pelicans came to town, and asked him, because we all knew PJ Tucker was on the trading block. And so I asked Alvin what he remembered about PJ, because Alvin was the first coach PJ had back when he came back to the NBA after being overseas for a few years. And Alvin said, you know, he's that guy where if you got him on the bench, the whole time he's on the bench, you're thinking, I got to get that guy back in the game. This game is going sideways. There's something we're missing here. I've got to get PJ Tucker back in the game. And every coach since then, Watson has said the same thing. Lindsey Hunter, the couple of months he was coach, Jeff Hornacek said the same thing. Nobody can keep PJ Tucker on the bench. And guess what? In his first game with the Raptors, after not sleeping a wink on Thursday night after being traded, flying out there, doing an intro press conference in Toronto, playing, suiting up for the team, guess what? He comes off the bench, and Casey leaves him in there for 29 minutes in a huge game against the Celtics, who are ahead of them in the standings. And he played 29 minutes. He had 4 rebounds. At some point in the third quarter, he ended up with 10 by the end of the game. He had 3 steals. He had a big 3. PJ did everything in one game for the Raptors that he ever gave to the Suns every single night. And the Raptors now, I'd be surprised if Dwayne Casey doesn't play him 25-plus minutes a game for the rest of the year. So that was a great acquisition for the Raptors. For the Suns, this gives the Suns a chance to play the young guys. And as you can tell, the way that Earl Watson benched Jared Dudley for a month in December, starting in December, so that Dirk and Bender could get minutes. Now, last night, you didn't see Tyson Chandler or Brandon Knight get off the bench. They've got long, multi-year contracts. Those guys are not going anywhere, and they don't have a worry about not being able to play up to their contract. The reason you had to trade PJ Tucker and give him a chance if you want to play your young guys is PJ is playing for a contract. He's playing. This is his last big contract this summer. You can't tell PJ, sorry, guy, we've got to play you 15, 20 minutes a game even though we don't want to. You can say that to Jared Dudley, Tyson Chandler, and Brandon Knight, because those guys are on long-term contracts. And so the Suns did the right thing there.
So to your point, Dave, I was listening to Zach Lopez, and I believe it was Brian Windhorst that said, you know, it was a really good pickup for the Toronto Raptors, but look, at the end of the day, PJ Tucker's going to be playing 12 minutes on this team. And I was listening
that's
to that.
That's not true.
Yeah, I was listening to that, and I'm like, no, that's not remotely accurate, and especially when you're, you know, coming from the Toronto Raptors' perspective, is that you have a guy in Damari Carroll who they got as the LeBron stopper, quote-unquote. PJ Tucker does everything that Damari Carroll does, but better. He's an absolute tank. He can defend 1 through 5, always defends the opposing team's best player, and I think there is good. There's a lot of value in that for the Raptors. So I think PJ, he was my favorite Suns player. I think to me, he just embodied everything that the Phoenix Suns were, And as hard as it was to see him go, I thought that he played himself into a position where he deserved to make a postseason run.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you. It's tough from a fan perspective to see PJ go. And as a guy, and Dave can speak to this too, as a guy that got to know PJ, he was a genuine human being, hard worker, funny guy, always fantastic to me when we wanted to do stuff with him for Suns.com. We sat down with him for 15, 20 minutes every couple of years to do just full sit-down interviews, and he was great. A huge Charles Barkley fan. A lot of people don't know that, so he had that in common with a lot of Suns fans. And he's the kind of guy you look at and you go, That's the NBA dream. He got drafted and had to go overseas and found a way to get back into the league. And I told this story in a piece I wrote on Sports 360 AZ yesterday, but his introductory press conference was in a tiny conference room that actually was an office in U.S. Airways Center that there was only one media member that showed up to it. So they had to get a bunch of us employees.
Was that you, Greg?
No, I think it was Kevin Zimmerman who was writing at Valley of the Suns at the time, I think. No other media members show up. So they had to get employees to come into this little conference room to make PJ feel like there were people there. And it was him and Lance Blank sitting at this table. And PJ's in a white V-neck undershirt with a sport coat that he threw over it. It was the pretty much the lamest introductory press conference you could see. But then this guy works his butt off, gets four straight Dan Majerle Hustle Awards, and leaves as one of the favorite Suns for people right now. And he's probably on that list of guys like the Elliott Perrys, those blue collar guys that everybody always loves with the Phoenix Suns. It's crazy how he came from complete unknown to leaving as a fan favorite and going to be a defensive impact player on a team in the Eastern Conference that has a legitimate shot to make the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, PJ Tucker is going to be very much missed in Phoenix, that's for sure, both by the media as well as by the fans. If the Suns ever get another really under-talented but really high hustle guy back, that'll be great. But until then, you know what? I'm going to look at the Suns' schedule and see if the Raptors are coming to town anytime later this spring, because the Suns really ought to just give him his fifth straight hustle award as a Raptor at halftime or after the game. Yeah, just when he comes back into town, because in the 50-some games he played this year, he's already out-hustled anybody who's going to play all season.
I don't know. Alan Williams has hustled a lot on the bench with those reactions. So he's probably number two on the list.
And, you know, to Alan Williams' credit, he's also hustled a bunch on the court when he's had a chance to play. So who's the longest tenured Sun now then? Is it Eric Bledsoe?
It's Alex Len, right? Alex Len. Was drafted a few days before Eric Bledsoe was acquired.
So what do you guys think the possibility is of the Suns re-signing Tucker during the summer?
It really depends on the draft. I think so at the top of the draft, in the top 5-6 picks, wherever the Suns are going to be picking, the only guys out there really right now are small forwards and point guards. So if the Suns decide they're going to stay with Eric Bledsoe, then they're going to take a small forward. And if they take a small forward, they're not going to bring back PJ Tucker. If they take a point guard, then maybe. But then again, you've got the same problem next year that you have this year, which is, do you really want a super sub 31-year-old taking up 30 minutes a game because your coach can't make himself sit the guy down? Or would you rather see the young guys develop and try to become that kind of guy in the future?
Yeah, the only way PJ Tucker comes back in my mind is if they make some kind of larger move to move some of these assets and acquire an established star. So then it expedites timetable on when you're actually going to try to make the playoffs. Then it makes some sense to bring PJ Tucker back. But if you're committed to this youth movement and you're going to look at this draft as the key piece to that future, then I don't see a fit for PJ Tucker. You've got to roll with these young guys, figure out what you have on this roster, and just fully commit to developing the youth and let PJ go find a spot where he can have an impact on a true playoff team.
So with the absence of PJ Tucker, where do you guys think that the leadership on and off the court comes from with this team?
Well, I think it's starts and ends with probably Jared Dudley and Tyson Chandler. Those are the two guys that, in particular, Jared Dudley, they brought in specifically to be a leader for these young guys. And then Tyson Chandler is the epitome of professionalism. Ryan McDonough, in numerous radio interviews yesterday, made it a point to say they went to Tyson and asked if he would be all right with a reduced role and reduced minutes. And if he had said no, that he potentially would have been moved at the deadline. But he was more than accepting of it and embraced the chance to be part of this youth movement. And he's very much a key part for Earl Watson, too, an ear that Earl Watson bends on a regular basis on in terms of what's going on. I actually think he's kind of like we talked about Ronnie Price, kind of part of the coaching staff at this point as well.
You know, I'm going to deviate a little bit from Greg on this one. You know, we can't agree on this entire podcast. That's ridiculous.
No, we can't.
I think from a locker room point of view, from a professionalism, from a maturity point of view and culture and all that, yes, Tyson Chandler, Jared Dudley, Ronnie Price are the guys. But if you really are looking for an on-court leader going forward, if you're looking for somebody who's going to lead the guys during wins, lead the guys on the court, be the guy who finishes games, the Suns are going to begin and end with Devin Booker. I think as Booker grows and matures, he's got the fire, he's got the ear of the guys on the court. He talks trash, he talks up his own players. He's the guy who's going to bring the Suns back to the playoffs if the Suns are going to make it back to the playoffs with anywhere close to this core because he can carry the team. He can make the winning shots, and he can talk trash to the other team's players, and he can build up his own guys while he's excelling on the court. The problem the Suns have had the last few years is that all their best culture guys have been super sub type guys or on the backside of their career. Jared Dudley can only do so much while he's on the court because he's only on the court for 15, 20 minutes a game. Tyson Chandler really can't do that and never was the team's leader coming to the Suns. So while I agree with Greg from a locker room and culture point of view, I've got to say it's going to be Devin Booker or bust.
Well, for me on court, I would think on court it's probably on Eric Bledsoe right now. You really think that, they
Bledsoe
want to put it on
the
20-year-old?
Yeah, no, they don't want to put it on a 20-year-old. Nobody wants to put it on a 20-year-old, but Eric Bledsoe has proven in 4 years he is not the guy who's going to lead his team emotionally on the court like a P.J. Tucker. You want to put a P.J. Tucker attitude into a star. You want to put a P.J. Tucker attitude into an all-star. Eric Bledsoe doesn't have that. He's great, but he doesn't have that. Devin Booker has that.
So the one thing that we haven't brought up yet from the trade deadline is the Phoenix Suns also received Mike Scott for cash from the Atlanta Hawks. When I first saw this, I read it wrong, and I thought that the Phoenix Suns paid cash for Mike Scott, and I thought to myself, well, that guy's kind of garbage. So I looked up his numbers, and I was like, yeah, no, he's not a very good player. As Dave pointed out to me on Twitter, and by the way, you can always follow Dave at DaveKingNBA, is that allowed the Suns to hit the salary floor, and they're now $188,000 over the salary floor. So that's important moving forward. And one thing, I'm not a cap expert by any stretch of the imagination, but one thing I've been confused about as far as the floor. So basically the way that it works is if your team doesn't hit the floor, that you have to divide that money up between the players on the team, right?
So I don't get why go to the effort to acquire Mike Scott when you could just give it to the guys that have been playing. I don't understand why bothering with it.
Is there a penalty?
I have always asked the same question. No, I've always asked the same question, but every single NBA team does this every year. There's always a team under the floor. There's always acquisitions at the trade deadline to fake it. I'm drawing a blank, but there's one guy this year alone who's been traded two or three times just to get a couple of different teams to the salary floor before they waive him.
Yeah, what was his name? I remember that. That was funny.
Gosh. There's two or three.
It's a point guard.
No, last year there was the one guy who was traded like four times in the summer, but I think just in the past month or so, there's been someone who's been traded two or three times, and each time it's gotten his team, that team, to the salary floor. Yeah, I just don't agree. I just don't understand why the team won't just give these free bonuses out to players who have suffered through an entire season while you've underspent and barely spent barely enough to fit the minimum spending rules on the CBA, because that makes the players suffer a little bit too. So that bonus would be great, and I don't know why no team has done that.
The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
Going into the MVP of the week, and this being our first official podcast, it was a little bit difficult this week because we only really had one game to choose from, so it's a small sample size. I guess I'll start with myself for this one. My MVP of the week went to Alan Williams, who in 14 minutes against the Chicago Bulls had 16 points on 8 of 9 shooting, 3 rebounds. He was a positive 11 on the court. This is in comparison to Alex Lynn, who played 34 minutes, 6 points, 7 rebounds. He was a negative 12 on the court, and to Espo's point earlier is that you did not see a Tyson Chandler even play in the game. He received a DNP. To me, this has to be MVP of the week has to go to Alan Williams. No, I
totally disagree. The MVP of the week has to go to Derrick Jones Jr.'s compression shorts in the dunk contest, because he was wearing those short shorts and he jumps over four teammates. If anything pops out, we've got the most awkward thing ever in the dunk contest, and he's probably made some enemies out of those four teammates that he jumped over. That's his compression shorts MVP of the week.
Yeah, we all saw Devin Booker's face as he was standing in line getting jumped over. He's like, oh, please don't drag across my head. No, I was going to go Derrick Jones Jr. too, because after he did that in the dunk contest with jumping over four of his own teammates, you know other NBA players are like, oh, my God, if I try to take a charge against this guy on an open fast break, the dude could just jump right over my head and make me look like the biggest fool. And last night in his first game after the All-Star break, Derrick Jones Jr. got the ball on the break, and there was a dude standing there, and that dude sidestepped Jones because he did not want to get embarrassed.
Wasn't just a dude. It was Dwayne Wade. He went, I want nothing to do with this guy.
Wade was like, no, this is not going to happen. But you know what? Before that dunk contest, Wade might have gone up and tried to block that. And he might have been successful because if he tried to meet him at the rim. But you know Wade was like, uh-oh, I'm exactly where Devin Booker was standing, and I'm about to get jumped over. And so he stepped right out of the way. That was awesome. And that made – I was going to say Derrick Jones, too. But you know what? Since Espo said Derrick Jones, I got to pick somebody else. And I'm going to go with Tyler Ulis. I love that kid. I love that. He's going to figure out how to play in this league for the next 10 years as the smallest guy in the league. And he'll remain the smallest guy in the league for probably his entire career. And yet he finds a way to win. He finds a way to score. He finds a way to dish. And I just love watching him play.
My favorite part about watching Tyler Ulis plays, every single time he's on the court, the opposing point guard tries to back him down in the post. I just say it's beautiful. Like how long is this going to happen for this kid? Poor guy.
But what's great is they talked about that in the summer, and they're like, yeah, that's fine. What he does is he gets down under your waistline and he starts poking around, and he gets all low and poking around. It makes you totally uncomfortable and lose your balance. So that's not going to work all the time against Ulis.
Well, and let's be honest, in today's NBA, most of these guys don't know how to post up anyway, so it's going to be
That's
pretty
true.
Ineffective.
But this kind of, you know, this kind of segues into where I wanted to go from a forward-looking standpoint, is that both Alan Williams and Alex Lynn are restricted free agents this summer. If you look at the per 36s on Alan Williams, it's 18 points, 15 rebounds, 3 blocks. I don't love per 36s, but I think in Alan Williams' case, that's the best sample size we're going to get. You look at Alex Lynn, per 36, 14 points, 12 rebounds, and 2 blocks. In your guys' opinion, what did the Suns do going to restricted free agency this summer with these two centers?
Go ahead, Greg.
Well, honestly, looking at it, I'm not sure they know what they're going to do, because they weren't giving either of these guys big minutes up until last night or Friday night, when they decided it was time to actually sit Tyson Chandler. And Alex Len got the start. Alan Williams got big minutes, played well. I think you see Alan Williams back, just because hometown kid playing his backside off for this team. And when he gets in, he seems to do impressive things. Now, I don't think he's the center of the future. I think he's a great bench guy, a guy that'll come in and give you some quality minutes. But the big question mark is, do you really want to invest long-term in Alex Len? Have you seen enough from Alex Len to prove that he is the guy that you can start at center as part of this youth movement? I don't think you have. I would have loved to have seen this team try to acquire a Nerlens Noel at the break and go after a young guy like that that could potentially be that guy. I like Alex, nice guy, hard worker, but I'm just not seeing it. I don't think he's the center of the future. He's probably somebody's backup in this league, but I don't think you can invest in him long term if the dollars are too high, because he's not a starter right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Alex Len is a nice backup, but when the money that goes around this summer is in the $15 to $20 million per year range, like it was last summer, you've got to just say good luck on the next team, Alex. That's in fact one of the reasons that you're okay, or I'm okay, with Tyson Chandler still being around, because Tyson Chandler is clearly ready to play any role the Suns want him to play. He can be starter and grab you 15 boards, or he can be a DNP and he's not going to complain. And so if the Suns do find a center of the future, he'll be a great backup. If the Suns don't find a center of the future, Tyson Chandler can still fill that role. He could probably still do that when he's 40.
Real quick, if you guys are Ryan McDonough and you can get either Alex Len or Alan Williams, both 4 years, $10 million a year, who you picking if you have to decide?
Neither. I don't give either of those guys that kind of money.
No?
Like, Alan Williams is nice, but he's not $10 million a year, and I'm not prepared to commit to Alex Len long-term like that. I'd rather go find somebody outside of the organization to try to make that kind of an offer to.
Yeah, I agree. I think actually what'll most likely happen is that, because Alan Williams lives in Phoenix, his mom is the city police chief in Phoenix, I think Alan Williams will just re-sign with the Suns for something a lot more reasonable than that. Even in this day of spending money, he doesn't profile as anyone's regular backup physically, and so other teams are not going to make him a big offer. I think the Suns will re-sign him for a good short-term deal with a nice raise.
So to that point, if Alex Len is nothing more than a backup center, did the Suns just let him walk in restricted free agency for nothing? Why not trade him over the deadline for at least a couple of second-round picks?
They should have traded him, I think.
But the problem is, I'm betting there wasn't a whole lot of interest in him because of the fact that they hadn't played him a lot, and when he played this year, he didn't impress all that much. That could have been a miscalculation in playing Tyson Chandler so much early in the season. Was you didn't get a better feel for Alex Len, and you didn't give a chance to increase his trade value. So,
Well, on the other hand, though, Greg, they gave Brandon Knight plenty of chances to increase his trade value.
But that was the fact that that $15 million price tag was why they gave him plenty of chances.
Yeah, but still, sometimes when you give somebody a lot of exposure, they make it even worse for themselves, is all I'm saying.
This is true, but they didn't start Brandon Knight, which if they had, maybe his ego and temperament would have been different, and it would have helped him out. I think he's pouting because he's a sixth man, and he feels like he's not a sixth man.
Which is exactly why, a big reason other teams did not acquire him, because no team wants to say, Brandon Knight, you are our future at guard. And every team thought he'd be a great sixth man. And so the way he's tanked this year, mentally and physically just tanked while healthy, totally wrote him off everybody's board.
Yeah, nobody wants to be the fourth team to go, hey, Brandon Knight, you're our starting guard. Oops, wait, we screwed up. You know, nobody wants to be the fourth NBA team to do that.
We are PHX.
The Tank Rank. Where the Phoenix Suns stand right now, you have the Brooklyn, a.k.a. Boston, because they actually have their pick. They are 9-48 on the season. They've lost 15 straight games. They are 0-10 in their last 10. Their chance of getting a top three pick is 64%, number one overall, 25%. The Phoenix Suns coming in second, 18-40 on the season. They are 8.5 games back, 8.5 games back of the Brooklyn Nets, a.k.a. Boston. They've lost one straight, 3-7 in their last 10. A top three pick, they have a 56% chance of getting a number one overall, 20%. Number three, you have the Lakers, 19-40 on the season. They've lost three straight, 3-7 in their last 10, with a top three chance of 47%, a number one chance of 16%. You look at the Phoenix Suns schedule moving forward this week. They play the Bucks, the Grizzlies, the Hornets, and OKC. You look at the Lakers, they have the Spurs, the Hornets, and the Celtics. Guys, what's your take?
Well, can somebody explain to me why we all think the Kings are the worst organization in the NBA when the Nets, who don't even own their own pick, are doing the most impressive tanking job for the second straight year, and they're going to get no benefit out of it? The Nets have to be the worst run franchise in the NBA right now, because if I'm sitting there and I go, okay, I know I have no chance at my own pick, I'm just going to simply sign enough veterans to be halfway decent just to screw the Celtics over. Instead, they're in a massive tank mode.
Yeah, I don't know how the Nets have put themselves into this position, and I don't know how the Celtics got so darn lucky. I mean, anybody would have accepted that trade a few years ago of, hey, let's give me all of your oldest players, and I'll give you every draft pick I have for the next 6 years. I think anyone would have accepted that deal. I think, you know, we got to give Danny Ainge credit for even getting the deal on the table. We don't know how much he actually had to negotiate for that. I feel like that's like a Herschel Walker trade type thing where it just so happened. I think the Cowboys, I remember the Cowboys back in the 80s laughing about the Herschel Walker trade. They said they spent about 3 seconds trying to make it an even sweeter deal than what was offered to them by the GM. His last name was Lynn back then for the Vikings. And then they just took the deal before it went off the table. And I'm pretty sure that's what happened with Danny Ainge on this Nets trade. Oh, man. So, yes, the Celtics are set up for about the next decade on these picks. But the Suns are second best in that regard. I think the Suns have done a really good job of finally committing, even though nobody wants them to, and including owner and managing partner Robert Sarver. Nobody really wants the Suns to tank, but they had to in the last couple of years after everything went south, and I think they've done a good job. I think bringing in Dragan Bender and Marquese Chris last year really helps. As far as the tank rank this year, you know what? If the Suns dropped a third, if they dropped a fourth, it's not that big a deal. This is a great draft. There's going to be just as good of players, if not better pros at 3, 4, and 5 than are at 1 and 2. I'm not 100% convinced Lonzo Ball is the next Jason Kidd. I'm not 100% convinced Marco Fultz is the next Damian Lillard type. I really think you're going to get some really, really good players at 3, 4, and 5, even 6 through 10. I'd even consider maybe the Suns actually trying to get another top 10 pick and using a Dragan Bender or a Chris to get there. But anyway, that's for later. That's for another time. That's for when we start talking in May and June after the season's over. For now, I think we just enjoy what we have. We enjoy watching the kids, and we don't worry about exactly where they fall and that the Lakers are only a half game back at the moment.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Enough talent in this draft that wherever in the top five you wind up, you're going to get an impact player. And I think Friday night's game against the Bulls is exactly what you want to see from this Suns team. A lot of effort, a lot of heart, close game, lose in the end. That's what you want to see. It gives you hope for the future, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't make you fall into the 7-8 range where I still think you get a good player, but you need a true impact guy.
We are PHX.
Dave, there's actually something I really need to get off my chest. It happened last night. I was watching the Suns game and realized that they're offering discounted tickets to March 3rd's game against Oklahoma City. And usually not a big deal. Second worst team in the NBA offering discounts to try to get people in the building. It makes sense. But then you realize Friday's game, the March 3rd game, is Al McCoy Ring of Honor night, and it really, quite frankly, pissed me off that fans have not sold this game out. If there is ever a man that you should put aside your bitterness towards Robert Sarver and towards the fact that this team has been bad and hasn't made the playoffs for 7 years, it's Al McCoy. There is no reason that this game shouldn't be sold out. Al is the voice of the Suns, and he has been the soundtrack to every great moment in Suns history. And when you have a guy that's been there that long, has meant so much to a franchise, and quite frankly has meant so much to the fans, it's frustrating to see that they aren't stepping up, buying those tickets, and honoring this man, because it's an important event to me. I grew up, my parents refused to have cable, so I spent many a night listening to my Black Emerson clock radio and Al McCoy describing every moment of that great 92-93 season and all those great 90s teams. And Al is the Suns to me. And the fact that these fans haven't stepped up and sold out this game frustrates me. Now, I don't know if it's a fact that the Suns haven't done a good enough job promoting that it's Al McCoy Ring of Honor night, which very well could be part of it. I had a few fans on Twitter say that to me, that they didn't even realize it was Al McCoy Ring of Honor night. But come on, guys, we need to sell out this game for Al. He deserves this. And if this is our last chance to honor him, because you never know, a guy in his mid-80s, he could retire, something could happen. We need to honor this man and show up on Friday night for him.
Absolutely. I think we definitely need to push this on Brightside, and we need to push it on SportsAZ 360 and the solar panel as well. You guys, we have to sell this game out. We have to get this game sold out. I grew up on Al McCoy. I grew up listening on he used to simulcast on Channel 9 on TV as well as the radio. And we all dealt with the fact that it was a few seconds off. In fact, you know, they did a good job just timing up the plays with his voice. And so that is the sound of the Suns. That is everything. That's every great thing that's ever happened in the Suns has Al McCoy doing the play-by-play for it. And so, yeah, we definitely need to do this. We need to sell out that stadium. We need to enjoy that night and show up and watch them honor this man who is the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I don't care. I usually won't tell people how to spend their money. I understand. Times are tough for a lot of people, and your money is your money. But if you're a Suns fan, this is the one time I'm going to tell you, drop the money on this. Go out there, honor Al, and I don't care if you don't go to another game for years. Do it for Al McCoy. He deserves an amazing evening on Friday night. So that is the inaugural, well, kind of the inaugural edition of the Solar Panel, the Ish Smith episode number 3, since we had 2 preview episodes. Want to remind you, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. We also highly, highly recommend you leave us a rating. It helps other people, other Suns fans, find the show, which that's what this is all about. This is about talking Suns with you, the Suns fans. You can also follow us on Twitter at Suns Solar Panel. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Suns Solar Panel. You can find us online, sunspodcast.com. You can find Dave King at Dave King NBA on Twitter. You can find Tim at I actually don't remember. I think it's at Radio Tim is what you can find Tim at. And you can find me at Espo on Twitter. So for Dave Kim and Tim Tompkins, I'm Greg Espadu. We're going to talk to you next week here on the Solar Panel.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.